And now for reading and writing and radio.
Marcy! Betsy's voice was distant. Marcy, where are you going? Marcy didn't look around. She scuffled along the shore path, no faster, no slower, raising puffs of dust that settled back on her bare feet. A restlessness stirred her. Every day she played with Betsy and Janice and Thad and Kenny. She wasn't exactly sick of them. But sometimes you just don't feel like doing things with the same old people, she said. She found herself at the end of the cottage row before the fence of boats for rent. What she wanted was to have an adventure. But how did you go about having adventures? Not by sticking around the cottage. Nothing ever happened there. You had to fare forth in search of them, like knights of yore. That's what I'll do. I'll fare forth, she cried aloud, and at the decision her vague yearnings snapped away. But didn't knights, when they started, take some sort of vow that they'd be faithful or bring back the maiden in distress or some such? She looked around. No one was in sight. She couldn't expect to find anyone in distress, of course, but she could vow something sort of general. She put her hand over her heart, closed her eyes, and whispered, I do solemnly swear to fare forth and not return to home and loved ones until I've had an adventure.
Will Marcy have an adventure? The book, The Ghost Boat, by Jacqueline Jackson, will tell you. But you can fare forth in search of adventure, too.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Settle back and I'll finish the story that I started in the opening. Marcy is off in search of adventure. And she goes along the side of the lake and through the pasture and into the Girl Scout camp and along the edge of the shore in a sort of deserted place. She sees the ghost boat, which is what our book is about. And she is a little upset and frightened by it, but she decides to go out and give it a push out to set it floating again. And so she does that and thinks maybe that's the adventure, but somehow it doesn't seem adventurous enough. And so she decides to move on and go further for adventure. And so she decides that she's going to go up into the Girl Scout camp. Why stick to the shore path? It was as familiar as the inside of her own mouth. She'd never have an adventure on the shore path. But if she left it, went back into the unexplored hills of the camp, surely there'd be an adventure there. To see how the Girl Scouts lived, to talk to them in a friendly manner. Wouldn't Thad and Betsy be jealous if she got invited to eat in the mess hall, or to swim on the dock with the slide, or go canoeing in the green canoes? She'd make a friend of some scout, that's what she'd do, and that scout would let her paddle stern. Kenny never let her paddle stern in his canoe. She'd paddle right past his dock, and he'd see how good she could do it. Her heart pounded with the daring of the idea. And so she veers from the path, climbs the hill, and goes up into the camp, past the empty mess hall, through a well-beaten track in the woods. She sees a little sort of cottage with screening, and she peeps through it and sees that it's not empty, that somebody is there threading a small loom in a corner. And so she slinks away. But why? Was there anything wrong with visiting the scout camp, even though it wasn't Visitor's Day? You'd think they'd be glad that a Laker was interested in the camp. You'd think they'd make a special effort to show her around and make her feel welcome. Well, next time she wouldn't be so scaredy. She'd say hello, or she'd never get to paddle stern. She stopped abruptly at the edge of a clearing. Here was where the scouts lived, and in miniature log cabins, and turns out that the scouts are there. the sides are canvas, and the canvases are up so that they're having rest hour, and they're all sitting there sprawling on their cots or reading or writing or combing their hair or sleeping, and a couple were out on a blanket under a pine tree pasting something in a scrapbook. So Marcy stands on the edge of the clearing watching them and wondering how she can go up and make friends. She thinks she should just wander into the area and stop by the girls on the blanket and say hello in a friendly fashion, and then they'd say hello, and in a few minutes they'd all be talking and laughing, and then they'd show her the camp and the canoes, and it'd be easy. So she takes a step forward and stops, and then she tries again and stops. And her body doesn't feel like going where her brain tells her. And finally she forces herself to walk to the girls, but she finds that she walks right past them. And when she gets past them, she looks back and discovers that nobody even noticed her at all. She'd been as invisible as a ghost. A ghost! Maybe this was the adventure. Somehow, being so close to the ghost boat, touching it, shoving it out into the lake, might have had the power to turn her into a ghost, too. So she looks at her hands, and they don't look very ghostly, and she touches them, and they don't feel very ghostly, but then she decides she'll test it. So she walks across again, and still nobody notices her. So for a third time, she decides she really is invisible, and so she starts across jumping on one foot, and nobody notices her. And so she crosses the clearing again, holding her feet and her ankles and waddling like a duck, and nobody notices her. And then she starts across again, turning somersaults, thoroughly enjoying being invisible, while all these Girl Scouts can't see her. And then the bell rings for, or the bugle for, the end of rest hour, and they all jump up from their beds and they start leaving the clearing, and somebody actually jumps right over her where she is on the ground from her somersaults. And as they all leave, "I'm a ghost," Marcy marveled out loud to the empty clearing. And so she gets up and follows the girls down to the shore, thinking that this is really quite an adventure. And so she stands there down on the shore among the milling throng on the beach. She prickled with a delicious sense of power. She was a ghost. Nobody could see her. She could go anywhere and do anything. And she stands watching the tag board and wondering what she's going to do in this good situation. "Hey, you," shouted a voice. "Hey, you, out there in the red shorts and striped shirt. You by the tag board. Hey, you, are you deaf?" Marcy came to with a start. She had on red shorts and a striped shirt. Someone was yelling at her. But how could they? She was invisible. She was a ghost. She turned, flushing. "Get out of the area without a suit on," yelled a lifeguard at her. She slunk off. She stood by the canoe racks a little way from the waterfront. Her face burned with humiliation. No, she wasn't a ghost. She wasn't invisible at all. Everybody could see her. They'd seen her all the time. The truth was, she didn't count. She didn't matter. She was just a nobody. "Hey there, don't lean on those canoes." It was that same awful lifeguard again. Marcy jumped forward. She wasn't hurting their old canoes. She stood a careful distance between the canoes and the waterline, scraping a groove in the damp gravel with her big toe. A tide of anger rose in her against the guard, against all those laughing, screaming scouts in the water. That's all she was to them, just a nobody. But then her wrath shriveled like the fringe of wave suds on the shore by her feet. Beyond it stretched a bleak ocean of desolation, an ocean filled with emptiness, with grayness, with nothingness forever and ever. It had been glorious fun to be invisible, but to be nobody. She felt lonelier than she'd ever felt in her life. Tears filled her eyes. Her chin wobbled uncontrollably. She was nobody, and it was a state of horror, of terror. How long she stood there while waves of nothingness washed over her, she didn't know. Figures and movements and voices swam together into a vast scene in which she had no place. But suddenly she blinked back her tears and the screaming scouts leaped into focus again. Why did she have to stay here and watch them? Nothing was holding her. She could go home, home. And so she turns and walks stiffly past the canoe rack and out onto the shore path until she passes the corner where they can't see her anymore. And then she begins to run, and she runs all the way back along the side of the lake and past the boats for rent and past the other cottages until she gets up to her own cottage and is there, and she sees all of them in the water. Betsy looked up. "Oh, there you are. We're trying to have a water ballet, and you're the only one I can find to do a pinwheel with without getting a snootful. Where'd you disappear to, anyway?" Marcy's whole being flooded with joy. She'd been missed. She was wanted. She wasn't a nobody, not to Betsy. She loved Betsy with her whole heart. "I went in search of adventure," she blurted. It was only then she remembered her oath not to come back till she'd had an adventure. But it was a silly oath. It didn't matter at all whether she kept it or not. "Well, did you find one?" Janice's tone was big sisterly, amused. Marcy started to shake her head, but then she stared at the expectant-faced swimmers. She'd thought she'd hadn't, but wasn't knowing what it felt like to be an invisible ghost an adventure? And then even a bigger adventure when you found you weren't a ghost, to realize what it felt like to be just a nobody, even if the feeling was one you never wanted to have again? "Yes, yes, I did have an adventure," she answered. "What was it?" Betsy demanded. Marcy considered, and she decides that she really can't tell them, so she tells about the ghost boat and pushing it out. "Oh, you did not," said Thad. "Everybody knows that ghosts are just nothing, so how can nothing be real?" "Oh, but it can be, it can be," Marcy cried jubilantly, and ran up to the clothesline to get her bathing suit. So Marcy did have an adventure. She fared forth, and she learned something. "This past summer, I gave up an adventure, bicycling alone in England, because my mother was in the hospital. So here I was in the house I grew up in Turtle Township in Rock County, Wisconsin, in an area that I knew as well as, well as the inside of my own mouth. I stayed with my mother's nights so that my days were free, and I decided that I could still go on a bicycle trip right there in Rock County, that there were lots of roads that I had never been on before, and I decided that I would bicycle in all the 20 townships of Rock County. That would be 30 square miles to a township with lots of roads. And so every day I would take out the plat book, which was a big map of the county, and figure out where I was going to go, and put my bike in the car and drive out and try what it was like on those roads. And you know what? I began to have adventures. Now, what is an adventure? One of my favorite assignments for my Sangamon State University writing classes is have an adventure and then write about it. I refuse to define adventure. I want to see what they consider an adventure. And at first they think, as Marcy did, that an adventure has to be something earth-shaking. But my dictionary gives as its first definition the literal meaning of the word. It comes from the Latin, and the ad part in Latin means to, while the vent part means it's a part of the form of the verb come. So adventure is to come. And the definition, the first definition reads, that which comes to one or happens to one. And only then does it go on to say, for further definitions, an exciting experience, a hazardous or daring enterprise. And so my students come to understand that an adventure is as much a state of mind as an exciting event that comes and thrusts itself upon you. You have the power to make quite ordinary events into adventures. I had a friend call me up one day in great excitement. She was thrilled. I could hear it in her voice. She had just had an adventure. And what was it? She'd been sitting at her desk studying and thinking and had a single rosebud in a bud vase in front of her. She was looking at the bud while thinking, and suddenly the bud gave the tiniest of pops and opened. It wasn't the opening of the bud that caused her excitement. It was that she had heard that tiny pop. She'd never heard a rose open. She'd never even thought that roses made a sound when they opened, and if she had, that she'd ever hear it. So she had had an adventure. That one came to her. She was just there. Advent. But you can put yourself in the way of an adventure. You can fare forth as Marcy did and as I did last summer on my bike. What were some of my adventures? Well, I made it my policy, and I've followed this philosophy most of my life, to stop and investigate anything that seemed remotely interesting. I never passed a stream without stopping to look at it. And once I was lucky enough to find a muskrat that was swimming in it, and I watched him or her for quite a while, gathering shoots of reeds and swimming with them upstream to its hole, its tunnel in the bank. And I would pull into farms that looked interesting and ask people what they were doing, or just talking to new people was an adventure. I discovered a magnificent stone barn, a great pile of handsome yellow sandstone that was built in 1857, and a lot of other farms with fascinating houses and barns. And I explored little villages whose names that I'd heard all my life, but that I'd never actually been into, in Avalon and Footville and Cooksville. I rode up to Janesville to watch a famous circus train go through, all the colorful cars from many circuses that are no more. One I remember was a huge shoe, like Mother Goose's old woman's shoe, with figures in it. As big as a boxcar was the shoe. And this parade was on national TV, this train, circus train, when it got to Milwaukee. I got caught in storms, and I took refuge on people's porches in order to keep from getting hit by lightning. And I picked an awful lot of black raspberries. I met many a dog. I had a technique to keep them from biting me, and if that didn't work, I'd put my feet up on the handlebars and just hope that I'd out-coast them before they gave up and went back to their yards. I gave a huge groundhog one heck of a scare, and I scared a skunk, too. He came up out of the grass and onto the road, and here I was whizzing by, and he leapt into spraying position. But fortunately, I was too fast and got past him before he let loose. Actually, he decided against letting loose once I got past. One sweltering day, I found a very old mill with the remains of a water wheel and a mill pond. It was a deserted mill. The dam was broken, but water was still flowing over it, and I was so hot that I sat down in the little stream and then lay down, getting wet all over and letting the water from the dam flow on top of me, and it was so refreshing. But when I stood up, I discovered that I was covered with leeches, bloodsuckers, each as long as my little fingernail, hundreds of them. Now that's what I would call a misadventure. Later that day, I found a bit of original prairie. And what a lovely adventure that was, walking through prairie grasses and flowers on land that has never been plowed ever since the beginning of this planet. I really haven't anything earth-shaking to report to you, but each day last summer was an adventure, and with anticipation I mapped out those roads that I planned to travel on, and then drove there and pulled out my trusty steed and started pedaling, keeping my eyes and ears peeled all the time. So today, I want you to think about adventures. Remember, adventure is a state of mind. If you're alert and interested in what's going on around you and a little bit bold, you'll find adventures popping up all over the place. Sometimes they'll find you, like my skunk that came onto the road. But then I wouldn't have met that skunk if I hadn't fared forth. Not really many adventures happen before the TV set. Although they do happen with books, and I don't think it's just my prejudice. Emily Dickinson, a poet that we're going to soon hear more of, tells in a poem about adventuring with books, and we'll read that when we get to the Emily Dickinson poem. I've had many adventures with books ever since I first began to be read to and then to read myself, and the adventures of books is why I'm a teacher and a writer and why I'm talking to you today. So, tell us of your adventures. For immediate writing, you'll have to remember an adventure that you've had. Maybe you didn't think it was an adventure at the time, but when you think back, you might say, hey, yeah, that was an adventure. But then I'd like some delayed writing, too. Why not spend this week thinking about adventures, seeking adventures, having adventures? Make something happen. You can keep track of it in your thought book. Like Rebecca Rowena Randall said that they were going to have to make some things happen so that they would have some interest in their thought book. And then next week, take some writing time to write down a new adventure to send in. Remember, a new experience is always an adventure. And when things go wrong, that's a misadventure, and misadventures often make better stories than adventures. The experience might be painful at the time, but the telling of it with lots of details, well, you know, if that skunk had gotten me, now there would have been an interesting story and a misadventure. And also remember, finally, Advent come to. You know the most important thing that has ever come to you? The most important, the most improbable, the least likely? Think about it a minute. The biggest adventure of your life is your life, that you are here, that you've been born. Life is an adventure, and it's the biggest adventure. So let's live it adventurously, with an adventurous spirit toward all that comes and all that we fare forth to meet.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.